we don't like throwing shade, but when temperatures climb like they have been, we definitely appreciate it. So how does Jacksonville rate in terms of the number of trees we have and what's being done to improve our urban and suburban canopy? And I'm so sorry. Please pronounce your last name for me.
Ann Colonisi.
Colonisi. Wow, so fun to say. Ann Colonisi, the Chief Resilience Officer for the City of Jacksonville, is here now for a closer look at this issue, along with Chris David, the Vice President of GIS and Data Science for American Forest, who is joining us by phone. Thank you so much, both of you, for joining us today.
Thank you for having us.
And with the heat is very much palpable right now. On the resilience side of it, how should we be looking at this right now?
Yeah, I think this is really, I couldn't think of a better time to have this conversation. We are coming off of the hottest recorded month globally, July 2023. And anyone here in Jacksonville is probably feeling the heat. Today is the ninth day in a row that the city has issued an excessive heat advisory. So we're all feeling it. And I think it's important to talk about what we have to consider as a city when we're looking at extreme heat. There's kind of three buckets of problems that we have to solve. The first is the public health crisis that can come from extreme heat. We know that heat is the deadliest climate-related hazard we face. Takes more lives each year than hurricanes, tornadoes, and wildfires combined. So really has to be top of mind how we keep people safe during these high heat events. Cooling centers, pools, those are the types of solutions we have to look at. The second kind of bucket to think about is how do we physically cool our built environment? And that's really where the trees come in. How are we deploying shade trees across the city? Where are we looking to strategically place cool roofs or green roofs, other things that can help prevent heat from absorbing in our environment and making it hotter? And then really the third bucket, I don't think is on a lot of people's minds, but it is on the minds of city officials and the way that we plan for heat events is where might we have critical infrastructure failures as a result of heat? Last summer, London really, this was kind of a wake-up call for London with bridges potentially melting, tarmacs melting. So we're really thinking about, as a city full of bridges, how are we making sure we're retrofitting those using the right materials? How are we working with JEA to make sure our grid remains strong? And so when we're thinking about extreme heat, it's important that we not leave any of those avenues unaddressed. And so that's really the resilience approach that the city of Jacksonville is taking, working on all three fronts.
Well, that just gave my anxiety such a little pinprick, thinking about bridges and tarmacs, having all kinds of issues. But thankfully, we have experts like you and Chris who are looking at these issues and figuring out, okay, what do we do? How do we fix these, or how do we prevent bigger issues in the future? And Chris, thank you again for joining us this morning. Why are trees so important in combating urban heat and other climate-related issues?
Thanks so much for having me. I'll start to answer that question by channeling our CEO at American Forest, Jad Daly. He often asks the question, if you want to design technology that cleans the air, reduces temperatures, reduces energy costs, and fights climate change by sequestering carbon, could you do any better than a tree? I'm not really sure that you could. Trees do all of those things and more. They provide both, pardon the sports analogy, offense and defense in the face of climate change. Working diligently to slow and reverse the pace of climate change, but also providing protection in the face of those changes, especially for extreme heat. An urban forest focused on tree equity can reduce temperatures by 20 degrees or more citywide. And that's incredible, but we really do need to act now. And I hope your listeners can visit treeequityscore.org to explore how they can help.
Yeah, Chris, has anyone ever called you the Lorax before? Someone speaks for the trees.
Yeah, every once in a while I get that, yeah.
It's giving big Lorax energy, and we love it because they are so important. Now, we've heard about things, you mentioned the tree equity score, and we've heard about important things like walkability score and bikeability score in neighborhoods, but tell us more about the American Forest Tree Equity Score tool and how it works.
Sure. Well, let me start by with a movement that it's supporting. We call it Tree Equity. It's a movement built on a simple vision that everyone, regardless of race, age, or income, deserves to experience the life-sustaining benefits of trees. And you know, as a country, we have lots of work to do to get there. Neighborhoods, for example, with the most residents of color have on average 38% less tree canopy and are over 10 degrees hotter than neighborhoods with the fewest people of color. Similarly, neighborhoods with the most people living with poverty have on average 26% less tree canopy and are almost 7 degrees hotter than neighborhoods with the fewest. So what tree equity score does, and it states the problem simply through a simple number from 0 to 100 for every urban neighborhood in the country, and puts that data, puts the data and information at the fingertips of anyone. That could be city officials or city planners, yes, but also community organizers, local nonprofits, and helps them chart a course towards tree equity in their community. It's a democratizing data tool. It's a tool for action, and not necessarily for data nerds, although there's plenty of data nerdiness going on behind the scenes, but rather for people out there every day doing the hard work to green their communities. We're really proud of it.
Well,
the other thing to note is that it is free. Oh, sorry.
No, I was going to say, speaking of the data, how do you collect it for the Tree Equity Score tool?
Well, it's really important to make sure that we have reputable sources and that they are available nationwide. So we do take advantage of demographic information from the U.S. Census Bureau, the CDC's Places Index to get health information. We collect heat disparity data that we derive from the satellite imagery from NASA's Landsat satellite. But what's really exciting about this release in particular is our source for tree canopy data. Advancements in AI and machine learning are growing by leaps and bounds every year, every day, it seems almost. For this release, we're utilizing incredibly accurate, high-resolution data, tree canopy data derived from the team at Google's Environmental Insights Explorer. I want to emphasize that just a few years ago, this would not have been possible. Without this data, Tree Equity Score doesn't exist. And we're looking forward to continuing to sort of build on this I call it a golden age for data, and, you know, using that data for the good of people and the planet.
It does kind of feel like that when we start talking about climate change and resiliency efforts, it feels like we're kind of catching up. And so while this is very new and needed, you're like, man, this also would have been great about 10, 15 years ago or so, as things like really started heating up. We're going to take a quick call from Lisa in San Marco. Good morning, Lisa. Keep it short and keep it on topic.
Good morning. This is Lisa Gruba. I'm the executive director of Greenscape of Jacksonville, and I'm so excited about this program. You have two of my favorite groups represented, our city's Chief Resilience Office and American Forest. When the Tree Equity Score was released 2 years ago, we immediately adopted it to our planting efforts, and since then, all of our plantings have been guided by the Tree Equity Score and where in town has a lower score. I also want to thank Anne for her leadership with the resilience plan that is just about to come out. We are really excited to see an urban forest master plan prioritized to where the city will then also be able to target those areas of town and incorporate them into their large-scale plantings. And we've seen great things from the administration this summer regarding also supporting maintenance of our trees. It's not enough just to plant them. We have to maintain them. So there are great things coming out, and I am really excited. I want to thank Ann Colonese for her leadership, and I want to thank American Forest for their work here.
Thank you so much, Lisa. Great point about planting the trees, but also maintaining them. Really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks, Lisa. I think, you know, you mentioned a couple of things that are really exciting and coming up. The city this fall will be bringing on a fellow whose full-time job will be to work with the city's Tree Commission and our nonprofit partners like Greenscape to develop an urban forest management plan. This will work with our urban forestry team, our city arborist, parks department, to start really thinking about where and how we need to strategically place trees. And I think Chris did such a good job talking about all of the benefits that trees provide. And so we do want to see canopy expand across Jacksonville. But last summer, one thing we learned through a massive heat study that we did is that where trees are concentrated is how we can get the greatest cooling benefits. So it really, that heat mapping exercise showed the value of our preserve parks in Jacksonville. And so as much as we're thinking about how do we expand trees in the right of way, how can that make the experience of a bicyclist or a pedestrian better? How can that prevent heat from being retained in concrete? All of these things are great benefits. We also really have to think about how are we protecting the massive preserve space that we already have in Jacksonville, and how do we prevent more trees from being cut down in the first place? So I think attacking it from both fronts of preservation and maintaining a mature tree canopy, and then also really being strategic in where and how we build out new trees to be planted.
And what cities are you looking at to kind of as like a model? Because how does Jacksonville compare to other, you know, urban parts either of the country or of Florida when it comes to tree canopies?
You know, I think I'll let Chris, speak to the actual scores of where how Jacksonville compares with other cities. But what I will say is that we're looking at, a lot of other cities in Florida for guidance on specifically that first bucket I mentioned of the public health implications of extreme heat. Miami-Dade has an incredible program where they have PE teachers, coaches, folks at their public schools who are trained in warning signs of extreme heat, because mm-hmm. we know that young people are highly vulnerable.
Oh yeah.
I think we're looking at how we can expand those types of trainings here in Jacksonville. We've done a large heat vulnerability assessment using a lot of data sets that Chris mentioned are also part of the Tree Equity Score, Census Bureau data, land cover, canopy data. And what we found is that half of Duval County schools and about 60% of aftercare facilities are in highly vulnerable areas. So thinking about how and where we target not just tree plantings, but also these other training programs that can help us address our most vulnerable residents are part of how we're holistically planning for this. And we do look to other cities to give us guidance and to see what's worked well other places.
Yeah, Chris, are there other cities that are kind of similar to Jacksonville? I know we love to think that we're very unique, but are there other cities that we can be kind of looking at as a model for this?
Yeah, so we would, so in Jacksonville, for example, we would start with identifying the general characteristics, historical characteristics of Jacksonville. It's a historically forested area. So it has a higher tree canopy target than, say, Dallas or Phoenix, and it's not particularly dense, so it can handle more trees than somewhere like New York or Chicago. So, I don't live in Jacksonville, but I might compare it to a place like Orlando or Atlanta. And on the whole, it's probably, on the whole, doing a little bit worse than Atlanta or a little bit better than Orlando. But I tend to look at this maybe a little bit differently. There's work to do everywhere across the country in all urban areas of the country. We need over 500 million more healthy urban trees to achieve tree equity in the country. And Jacksonville alone would need over a million, almost 1.4 million additional healthy trees for every neighborhood in the city to achieve tree equity.
Right.
City-to-city comparisons are valuable measuring sticks, no doubt, but Tree Equity Score is built for comparing the needs and the priorities of neighborhoods. So as Ann was saying, and to build off what Ann was saying, I might ask, how might Jacksonville create more investment in the areas that need them the most? Or what neighborhoods might Jacksonville target for tree planting, given limited resources? So just a couple of things there to hone in on.
And speaking of that investment, I think that leads in really well to a conversation about resources. And I think Jacksonville is really in a great position to aggressively start getting trees in the ground. The mayor's recent proposed budget adds $1.5 million to the tree planting fund, which brings our total to just over $20 million that are available for tree plantings. Now, that funding has a lot of constraints. It can really only go to trees and getting them in the ground. And we know that there's so much more that's needed for a tree planting program to be successful. There's a broad community engagement component that's needed to help residents see the value of this and be supporters. And so another funding source that we're really looking at is the Urban and Community Forestry Grant Program out of the Forest Service. And this is a successful program that is now getting a huge influx of funding. The Inflation Reduction Act is putting $1.5 billion of investment over 10 years in this urban and community forestry program. So Jacksonville is really actively looking to these federal resources to help supplement the local investment that we are already making in trees and helping it be not just trees in the ground, but really successful programs where the community can see the value. They're excited about this. And again, that master plan that we're going to be working on over the next year will hopefully help people see a year or two out where they're going to be getting trees. They can start to get excited and really be prepared for those trees going in the ground.
Well, I love that you bring up the community aspect of the tree planting process. We have a comment from Josh Weatherby, said, stop chopping down trees and stop planting palm trees specifically. They may look very Floridian, but they absorb almost no carbon, provide no shade, and provide no nesting for animals. There are plenty of options. What do you think about that?
I think it's a great point. I never like to take any option off the table. There are places where a palm tree's root system can go in a very narrow planting space. And so there may be times where that is a tree species that we want to consider. But by and large, palm trees do not provide robust shade. All of these co-benefits can be achieved with other species. And it's important for us to think about which species are gonna handle high heat and influx of precipitation due to climate.
Great, well, Ann Colonacy, the Chief Resiliency Officer for the City of Jacksonville, and Chris David, Vice President of GIS and Data Science for American Forest. Thank you both so much for coming and talking to us about tree equity and shade.